Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, president and founder of SMIE Consulting. And today we'll be taking a look at three interesting issues that have reared their heads in our news feeds in the last few days. Certainly a lot has happened in the last few days, particularly coming out of NAFSA. And how often, oftentimes, so much news breaks during the week of NAFSA that there's hardly enough time to cover it all. And we'll be covering some of those issues, some of those topics, and one in particular that we'll be seeing for many weeks and months to come, I believe, certainly on the midweek roundup. And also, I think we'll see it much more as we develop. Develop the story behind what's happening, particularly with China. So today, we're going to take a look at two reports that came out of NAFSA last week, one on global higher education in the Americas, and a second on the U.S. international education woes and some of the troubles this country has been facing in attracting and developing international education projects. So we'll take a look at those two reports, as well as mounting evidence that China is turning its head away from the United States as far as international education is concerned. And we'll take a look at two news stories that have reflected that in the past week, but also the late breaking news that in the last couple of days, certainly Monday, we saw the release of a statement from the Chinese government on a travel warning for its citizens. Kind of to safety warning coming to the United States and the impact that that will have on students and that are already here and prospective students and parents that are considering the U.S. So we'll take a look at the implications of that, I'm sure, for weeks to come. But let's start today before we get into those three topics, just a review of two resources we certainly want to make you aware of. In addition to the midweek roundup that you see live here on Facebook, we have an archive of these videos on our YouTube channel, but we also make available this video podcast, chat in podcast format on all your major providers, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. So please, if you'd rather hear rather than see me, I certainly understand and won't hold it against you. Subscribe to that podcast and look forward to being in touch with you on that platform. And also our SMIE Consulting website, which certainly provides a lot of free resources for institutions that might be looking for opportunities to expand what they're doing or refine what they're doing internationally. Certainly a number of free resources there for you to take advantage of. Also want to make sure folks who are listening to the podcast or watching the rerun of the Midweek Roundup know that we'll come live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will have the podcast version and the video replay available on Facebook and YouTube shortly thereafter. So let's get to the topics. NAFSA, obviously an exhausting week for anyone who spent time in the expo hall or racing around from session to session, really taking all that the conference has to offer. And certainly this year, being in Washington, D.C., had a lot of significance for in terms of opportunities for conference attendees, the 10,000 plus attendees that were from 75 plus countries, and really able to take advantage of visits with embassies and collaborations that with some of the international ed organizations that normally are at NAFSA, but certainly had much greater access to them in being in with the conference being in D.C. So certainly it's an exhausting week, as I told friends and colleagues about that conference and how to go and all of that. Certainly it's two parts, equally exhausting, but also equally fulfilling. And I always say this week of NAFSA is the reason I do what I do, and certainly helps recharge those batteries for me in terms of my motivation to press on and certainly not let the bad news of what's going on in the world, particularly as it relates to international education, get me down, and certainly not prevent me from making a difference where I can. So we'll talk in particular next week about some of the activities that have come out of NAFSA, one in particular related to a new study consortium for the national study consortium for the various state consortia that exist in the United States. So to talk about best practices and that. And for those who know me, being involved in state consortia are near and dear to my heart with my experiences in Destination Indiana during my time at Ball State and St. Mary's College, but also while at Education USA and the work I was able to do with other states that were getting their consortia off the grounds and ways that we could really help and help develop their local programs and their organizations. So I want to start today, though, with back at NAFSA at the beginning of the week. A colleague of mine, actually someone I have the pleasure of serving on the board of directors at Educational Credential Evaluators out of Milwaukee, the gentleman's name is Alex Usher. He was commissioned by NAFSA and the British Council to be the main author for this report, which took a look at globalization or national policies and internationalization. It's called The Shape of Global Higher Ed and with a focus on the Americas. So it did focus, Alex Usher focused his writing on national policies, a look at national policies in the U.S. and Canada, as well as four Latin American countries, Brazil, Colombia, Chile, and Mexico. So interestingly, it was released by the British Council in conjunction with NAFSA, and builds on a similar report that British Council had released last month at Going Global, the British Council's annual conference regarding higher ed policies in Europe. So we referenced that last week, certainly in the newsletter. What Alex does in this report is looks at 37 different indicators that look at internationalization strategies in the different countries, policies on student and academic mobility and research, policies on transnational higher education. We've talked about TNE here a number of times on the midweek roundup, and also policies related to quality assurance and credential evaluation, and funding. Not only imagine that funding for funding support for student and faculty mobility. So those reports, those criteria were used to evaluate those six American, Latin, and North American countries that are included in the report. And certainly, they also were referencing the reports that included the European countries. Netherlands had the highest overall score out of the 20 countries compared, the six in the Americas and the 14 in Europe. Canada ranked 10th and the U.S. was 13th. And the four Latin American countries in this report ranked 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. So what I think the point of Alex's report in terms of the narrative that he's come up with is that there is in the Americas, taking a look at the different differences here as compared to Europe, that is related to how decentralized things are in the U.S. and in Canada to a lesser extent, but certainly impacted there as well, is that the national governments really do not have in the Americas the same level of driving force in terms of international education policy and strategies. In fact, in the U.S., we know, and it's the worst kept secret, that there is no international education strategy. We'll talk more about that in the weeks to come, about why that isn't and what can be done about it. But in terms of just assessing the differences in the Americas, the U.S. and Canada certainly, in Alex's report, seem to indicate that they're being driven primarily by what institutions do, not by certainly national governments, and that much of what the U.S. and Canada's motivation in terms of internationalization and particularly inbound international students has been on funding. So, and helping bolster their bottom lines, their budgets, and whereas that's not always the case in other countries. So he concludes with a look at why the Latin American countries did so poorly on the report, is that that there's the support for international engagement in higher education was lower than for those four countries than the rest of the 16 on the list. because of lower comparable levels of national income, and that lessens interest on the national level in terms of interest in internationalization. So institutions have perhaps more freedom to do their own thing, so there's less national impetus to drive internationalization in many of these Latin American countries, certainly the four that are profiled in the report. But the U.S. and Canada are driven to attract more international students, again, but mainly for financial reasons. So there's, Alex does speak a little bit towards some of the future of what to expect here, and that in the years to come, he's expecting in Latin America in particular, the emphasis on internationalization, according to the report, in these countries will be with respect to international faculty cooperation or increased outbound mobility for graduate or postdoctoral students as they look to improve their own knowledge-based economies back home. Increases in research funding and that type of thing are looking to be the key elements in that report. So interesting, and certainly looking at the Americas, great case studies for anyone who's looking to for kind of a lay of the land, as it were, related to international education. Certainly recommend taking a look at that report and seeing how that might impact or compare to what you're doing in your own institutions. I do want to touch now on the second report that was released that week. And Lou, thanks for joining the Midweek Roundup. Certainly great to see you last week. Hope you're well and recovered from your NAFSA exploits. What we'll cover next in the roundup is the second report that was profiled or released last week by NAFSA, and it was one the Chronicle profiled on Tuesday, I think, or no, actually, take that back, on Wednesday last week. The title of the report is "Losing Talent: An Economic and Foreign Policy Risk America Can't Ignore." And we'll cover some of the highlights in the executive summary from that report that NAFSA released. But certainly with the Chronicle article, you see what's happening in this realm. NAFSA certainly has, as the largest international aid organization in the world, certainly has committed a lot of resources to making this particular issue front and center in terms of what it does. With its members, in terms of notifying its members and its advocacy work on Capitol Hill. And certainly the Chronicle article titled "Visa Woes, Politics, and Fears of Violence Are Keeping International Students Away," the report warns. The report itself refers to IRE data from Open Doors over the last 3 years and the drops in new international student enrollments, and we all are certainly aware of those. But it also focuses on a lot of the attitudinal results from surveys of U.S. institutions over the last 3 years. And they looked at 2016 to 2018 asked universities what they thought. And again, it's attitudinal and not necessarily quantitative, but certainly in terms of the actual numbers and the actual reasons why. But certainly the colleges seem to imply that the biggest single reason for perhaps a deterrent to students coming to the United States has been visa application process. And that's from where it was seen as an issue for maybe 32% in fall of 2016. It is now seen as over, jumped 49% in that 3 year period, where 83% reported it was now a deterrent. So that is a significant jump of perceptions by U.S. institutions of why incoming students are, or prospective students are, staying away or deciding not to come to the United States. So that is by far and away no other factor is above 60%. The next closest are social and political environments in the United States, certainly referencing a lot of the political rhetoric around the 2016 campaign and the fallout with the administrative policies since then. Now, that was a jump of about 45%, where it was barely registering at about 15%, up to 60% in over that same 3 year period. Another third incidents that seem to be the next largest concern why students stay away centered around they decided to enroll in another country's institutions. And that's certainly reflected not just in perceptions of the U.S. higher education leaders, but also just in the sheer numbers that we've seen jumps in other countries as better destination markets, at least more popular in the recent years, and with Australia, Canada jumping to the fore, even the U.K. rebounding this past year. But China as well, also becoming a major player on the inbound international student side. So that certainly makes sense that particular criteria is way up. Cost remains very significant, around 50% to 56%. The next largest one that saw a big jump gets the most hype in this report, and it's about safety, physical safety in the United States, which had been about 12% in 2016, according to U.S. institutions, and that jumped 32% to maybe 44%. So we're seeing that jumped, but it's the fifth out of seven in terms of most significant factors that colleges say keep students away. So it gets a lot of play in the media, as you well can imagine, but certainly that is not by any stretch the most significant cause for keeping students away. This data is according to colleges and their impressions of why students are staying away. So the actual report, I've posted the link to that. It's the Losing Talent report that NASA put out. Talks about the economic contributions to the economy by international students, the jobs created, international ed being the fifth largest service sector export. That talks about the decline in the new international student numbers over the last 3 years, and that the data showing, they focus again, they feel data shows that international students and scholars feel less safe and less welcomed in the United States than the previous year surveyed. Now that data, I'm not too sure where that's coming from, but certainly, is highlighting a lot of the negatives in addition to the global competitive market we're in, and we've talked about that many times on the roundup. But looking at the market share drop of the United States from 28% of the global student mobility market in 2001 to 22% in 2018, that percentage I don't pay much attention to, other than it's symbolic of it is an increasingly competitive market out there. Our market share has dropped, but also our share of our piece of the pie has grown. The numbers in that pie have grown from in the global student mobility pie from 2.1 million to 5 million in that same period since 2001. So we're looking at what NASA's projections. We see top 12 reasons for declining international student enrollment. And again, this is not direct attitudinal pieces from students. This is perspectives of the institutions. And yes, there are institutions that will do exit surveys for why students don't enroll, or will get anecdotal data that they'll report. But the reality is this isn't actual student data or student reasons why they didn't come. And NASA sort of is a little bit misleading in the report saying that it is, but it clearly isn't. So I just would, I don't say take it with a grain of salt, but certainly these are the attitudes of international ed professionals, certainly in the field, that may let their own views on things affect their answers to surveys like this. But it's really something that I think we see where when we get to actually talking with students, money is a big factor. Visas are probably going to be increasingly a factor, particularly if issues like China become much bigger than they perhaps need to be or should be. But the feeling unwelcome bits and the safety bit, I think some of that is all obviously projections of what our institutional representatives, as administrators, as applying their own reasoning to our own feelings about certain situations to to their responses to surveys. So again, this isn't student-specific data. It's what institutions believe that international student enrollment is declining, at least for new international students. So some interesting data to be sure, and certainly some information here as you talk to your institutional leadership about investing in international education, why they should or shouldn't continue to be involved. It's certainly important, I think, in the long run to keep on top of these things and the issues and the data that can certainly help you make the case for what you need to do in international education on your campuses. So as I post the links to these stories, I certainly encourage you all to check them out. And there's a couple on this last piece that I know we'll be speaking more about, certainly this week's decision by China to issue kind of an advisory, safety advisory to its citizens abroad. And we'll talk more about that next week. But there, these two stories here that I've just posted the links to really impact, I think, some kind of larger trends we're seeing in the marketplace, talking about the global competitive marketplace we live in for international students, is that other countries are becoming a more preferred destination for our number one market, and that's China right now. There's a couple of anecdotal things here that we'll see. We first have an article out of the South China Morning Post that looks at certainly what Chinese students being caught in the crossfire here, but there's an institution here that is surveyed, and I'm going to get to the exact number here. Yeah, there's and the data that they're using here is a survey that found that, and this survey I think we'll talk about here in a little bit. There's two pieces to this. One is a survey from a company in Beijing, I believe it's in Beijing, it's called EIC Education, where they surveyed that 20% or a fifth of Chinese students, this is their prospective students that they're dealing with, have plans to study in the United Kingdom, while only 17% favor the United States. So those numbers, Australia's coming up on that list, Hong Kong is up, and then Canada took fifth place in that report as top five destinations for, again, student, this isn't a global or a China-wide initiative, this is EIC Education, and that's a survey that they did with their students in terms of where their interests were taking them. And again, so UK is now number one according to that one report. What you also see is a company that does business in terms of transfers, Easy Transfer. That's a financial tech startup that facilitates tuition payments for Chinese students going abroad. That firm, again, piecing together the pieces of the puzzle here related to U.S.-China relations as it relates to international ed. In 2018, this company transferred $776 million abroad. And expects that number to be $1 billion this year, U.S. dollars this year. But its China to U.S. payment transition volume, which had been 90% of their business in 2015, was only 50% of their business in the first quarter of this year, 2019. So there's a trend, according to this company, Easy Transfer, for students that are actually going already there in the U.S., in other countries outside China studying, that there's a trend towards Chinese students choosing non-U.S. institutions. It seems to be UK, Canada, and Australia, according to Tony Gao, the Chief Executive Officer of Easy Transfer. So companies are also thinking about broader markets. Chinese companies are thinking about broader markets that they want to be a part of, and that may be impacting where they're sending their students and where they're looking to develop. So interesting to see where this goes, and certainly the second report that focuses on the EIC education survey of students does seem to shed light on why the trends are moving away from the U.S. And certainly what we saw in the news this week, we'll talk much more in depth about that and some of the implications that's going to have for international student recruitment in China. We're gonna see some implications. We talked earlier last fall about the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana or Urbana-Champaign, in their colleges of business and engineering there, insuring themselves against potential drops in Chinese student populations, which are by far the number one source of international student enrollment at UI or UIUC. And certainly we'll talk more about that as it impacts other institutions that maybe have been over-reliant on China, much like UIUC and Michigan State and others who have been too reliant on that market, and what that's going to mean for them if prospective Chinese students stay away, or if current students decide, oh, maybe it's not worth us staying. We might want to get out while we can. So we'll take a look at that more in depth next week. And certainly for those of you who've been watching, we appreciate your loyalty and look forward to seeing you again down the road and to having you contribute again here on the Midweek Roundup. So until next week, have a wonderful time, and we'll look forward to next conversations. Cheers.